The following audio is presented by Grace Church. For more about us, visit discovergrace.com, or you can download our free app by searching Grace Church Orlando on your phone or tablet. Now, we hope you enjoy the message.
Yes, so we're continuing our series through the Beatitudes, hashtag blessed, right? We're talking about like Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount. He starts off by saying, look, if you want to live a life that brings the most glory to God, if you want to live a life as a citizen in the kingdom of heaven, then this is who we are. This is how we act, right? Like this is really defining our pursuit of our entire life. And we talk about each one of these starts with this idea of blessed are, right? So it says like, blessed are the poor in spirit, right? So blessed is where we start. And we talked about defining that blessedness as more than just like some surface level happiness. We talked about being forever happy. We talked about a happiness that expresses itself, not just in walking around smiling all the time, but walking around with a deep peace, walking around with a deep contentment, walking around with a deep joy in the Lord that is untouched by the things that are happening in our world. And Jesus said, if you want to be that type of happy, this is what your life needs to look like. And so we started with Matthew 5:3, which is blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Or forever happy are those who realize their spiritual need for God, because they will have the kingdom of heaven now and forever. We keep going. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Truly happy, forever happy, are those who mourn over their sin, because they will be received by God and not rejected by God. And then last week we talked about blessed are those who, we skipped one. One more. Let's go back. Oh, we don't have it. It's okay. It's in my brain. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. And we talked about the fact that, again, truly happy or forever happy are those who submit their strength to God, because they will have a better inheritance than those who do not. So let's look at this week's. I know we have that one. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied, right? So he starts off talking about hunger and thirst. So again, if we're taking it at a very surface level, truly happy are those who are hungry. Is that our reality? Well, that's obviously not true. My daughter, she gets hangry. Anybody else in here get hangry, right? You're the ones who care how long the sermons go, aren't you? You're like, I'm about to Hulk out if we don't wrap this thing up, right? That is my daughter. You know the Snickers commercials, you're not yourself when you're hungry? Like my daughter turns into the most beautiful little Danny DeVito when she does not get enough to eat, all right? So is he saying truly happy are those who are hungry? I don't think so. What's he talking about? I think when he talks about hunger, and I think when he talks about thirsting, I think he's talking about longing. I think he's talking about the longing in the human heart for more, right? The longing in the human heart for more. We want more. We want more experiences. We want more things. We want more meaning in our life, right? And that's just a normal thing. Like to give you an example of it, it's in all of us, adults or kids. And so as you guys probably know, you live in Orlando, so you're close to all of it. But there's that new ride at Disney World, right? The Rise of the Resistance, the big Star Wars ride. And if you want to go to it, you can't just leave right now and go. You should have gotten there, 6 hours ago, right? And so you get in this like virtual line or whatever. So the first time we rode it, we brought our boys. They were so excited, like Star Wars is their world right now. And so they're so excited for it. We got in line at 5:45 in the morning, and you're like, great, you don't even get up that early to go to the gym. Well, maybe if the gym had rides and popcorn buckets and pretzels, maybe I'd go. But anyway, so we go and we get in line or whatever. We ride it with the boys, and the entire time their minds are just blown. Like everything is happening. They're walking around like, oh, and they're looking at me, and they're like, can you believe it? And it was the first time I rode it, so I was like, no, I can't. Like I'm like just as excited as they are. We get to the end of the ride. We pull out, and I don't remember which one of my boys it was, but one of them turns to me and goes, is that it? And I was like, I'm sorry, what now? And he was like, is that it? And I was like, you just went to space, all right? Like, we just went into space, and there was like, and we saw Kylo Ren came after us, and we escaped, and you saw an AT-AT. What do you want, all right? Like, what in the world do you want? But the reality is, like, after I walked around for a while, I was like, man, I wish I had another ride. You know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking, like, why can't we have more? And that's in the human heart, right, is we want more. And the problem with us longing for more is something called, in psychology, it's something called the hedonic adaptation. And you go, wow, Grant, you're really smart. Thanks. But the hedonic adaptation, here's what it means. It means that as we meet our desires, as we satisfy our desires, we get new desires. So as we, like, if we have this desire, like, oh, I just want to make this amount of money. I just want to make this amount of money. Then as we meet that, like, as we satisfy that, and that's our reality now, guess what happens to your desire? It keeps going. Like, it keeps rising. So as we accomplish, we want more. And as we get more, we want more, right? And that's what happens. We see it over and over again. And this is not a new idea. St. Augustine wrote about it. We see this writing. I want to show you this writing from 1621. This is from Robert Burton. He wrote this: "A true saying it is, desire hath no rest, is infinite in itself, endless, and as one calls it, a perpetual rack or horse mill." Again, like that's the truth. Like we recognize that our desire continues to grow. As we satisfy it, there's more. And as we satisfy it, there's more and there's more and there's more. And the scriptures say that. God speaks through the prophet Jeremiah. He says this in Jeremiah 2:13: "For my people have committed a double evil. They've abandoned me, the fountain of living water, and dug cisterns for themselves, cracked cisterns that cannot hold water." What is God saying? He's saying they have this longing in them that can't be fulfilled outside of me, but they're trying. And so they keep filling these cisterns with water that are cracked. Imagine if you were thirsty and I gave you a water bottle, but right before I handed it to you, I just poked a hole in the bottom, right? And I was like, "Here you go, buddy." Like, what would that do? You would keep drinking and you would still be thirsty, right? Because why? It's not holding water. It's not fully satisfying. And we do that. That's what the scripture is saying, is that we turn to all these other things and we turn to the cisterns of our family and our careers and of our desires and of money and of sex and of power and all these other things, and they're cracked cisterns. So where did this longing come from? This longing that is infinite in itself, this longing that is infinite, where did it come from? Well, look at Ecclesiastes 3. "God has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's mind, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end." And so one of the things we see is that God put this longing in us. Because check it out. It says that he's put eternity into our mind. So we have this longing, this desire for eternity. But then he said at the same time, you cannot figure out all that God has done from the beginning to the end. So you have this longing for more, this eternal longing, but you also have an eternal limit, right? Because God exceeds that. And so you have this longing for more, and you have this limit to your understanding. So God put this longing in us. Why? Why would he put this longing in us? C.S. Lewis said it this way: "If I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world." The point of this eternal longing that God put in us is to point us back to him. It's so that we look beyond the created world in front of us and look to the Creator, right? Like, that is the purpose of this longing, to point us back to Jesus. St. Augustine said this: "You have made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you." So oftentimes we experience this restlessness in our lives where we're like, why don't I feel this deep satisfaction? Why don't I feel this contentment? Why do I want more? And I think it's because we've misplaced our longings. And I've felt this profoundly in every stage of my life up until this point. I know that when I was in college, I had a belief that I had this longing that I just need to finish school. When I finish my education, like, I will feel so satisfied. And it's true, I did for a minute, right? I did feel satisfied for a minute. And I was like, I don't have to go back to class. Like, this is all good. I've got my education. I can move forward. But was it lasting? No, I wanted more. And so then I thought, okay, well, when I get married, you know what I mean? Like, that'll meet a huge need in my life. And that'll meet this huge desire that I have. And I was happy. And I absolutely was happy. But then there was what? I wanted more. And then, okay, well, what if I get a good career? Or what if I start making this amount of money? Or what if we build a house? Or what if we get whatever it is, fill in the blank. The point is that every time I have this misplaced longing that I put on all these other things, looking for that to ultimately satisfy, I'll find happiness. But lasting satisfaction that we see promised in this beatitude, no. Look back at the beatitude, Matthew 5:6. Again, it says, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied." The promise of satisfaction is if our longings are focused on righteousness. If we place our longings on righteousness, so we got to figure out what is righteousness, because that sounds super churchy. So what is that? Well, there's two different ideas here of righteousness. The first one is righteousness you've been given through Jesus. 2 Corinthians 5:21, it shows it to us. "For our sake, he made him," that's Jesus, "to be sin who knew no sin, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God." That means that we've been declared righteous before God. We've been declared right before God. So when we stand before God, when I stand before God, I will not stand before God in my own rightness, in my own goodness that I've done. Instead, I've been covered by him. It's like the story of the prodigal son, right? The prodigal son, he comes home and his dad throws a robe over him and puts a ring on his finger. What is under that robe? like pig slop. He was just feeding the pig. He was just eating from the trough that the pigs would eat from. He was covered in filth and dirt and all the consequences of his mistakes, right? And what did the Father do? The Father covered him with his own robe. And that's what we have in the righteousness of God in Jesus. We are declared righteous. So when I stand before the Father, yes, I've made more mistakes than I will ever say on this microphone. I have made more mistakes than I ever want to admit to my own self. I have sinned and I've turned away from him over and over and over again. But when I stand before the Father, I don't stand there going, here's the good I could do. Here's the rightness I could accomplish. Instead, I will be standing and you will be standing covered by the righteousness of God. And so we have that. And I want you to be sure of that. If you walk away from the sermon going, man, I got to work harder to get that righteousness of God. Absolutely not. The works of God, as Jesus tells us in John 6, is to believe on the one whom he sent, right? And so to believe in Jesus, we're covered. But the second righteousness, what we're talking about here, what Jesus, I think, is pointing us to here is a righteousness that we do. Look at 1 John 2:29. If you know that he's righteous, you know that everyone who practices righteousness is born of him. So it's practicing righteousness. And we know that God sets the standard of righteousness. So it's practicing and doing things that align everything in our lives up with God, right? That's how we practice righteousness. It's aligning everything up in our lives with God's standard, with who he is, right? So when we look at our work life, when we look at our family life, when we look at our dreams, and when we look at our finances, and we look at whatever it is in our entire lives, everything is to be in alignment with God. And Jesus goes on to talk about this in Matthew a little bit later after the Beatitudes. And he says this in Matthew 5:20. He says, "For I tell you, unless your righteousness, the righteousness that you do, exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven." And then he goes on to talk about this and to reveal the heart of God. In verse 21, he says, "You've heard it said, don't kill. I'm telling you, don't have hate in your heart against your brother, or you've committed murder." He goes on to verse 27. I know you've heard it said, don't commit adultery. I'm saying, don't even have lust in your heart over somebody, right? In verse 43, he says, I know you've heard it said, love your neighbor. I'm telling you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, those who do wrong towards you, right? What is he revealing? He's saying, this is what the heart of God looks like. If you want righteousness in your life, you want to do the rightness of God, then this is what your life needs to line up with. And so the longing for righteousness, the longing for righteousness is a desire to be aligned with God in the way we think, feel, and act. This is what it looks like. To hunger and thirst for righteousness is that we would have a desire to be aligned with God in the way we think, we feel, and we act. We would be so close with him that, again, the way that we think and we feel and we act would be aligned with him. And that's the long for it, right? Romans 8:29 calls it in a different way. It says that we're conformed to the image of his son. It means we become so much like him. It means that the way we think and the way we feel and the way we act are so aligned with his heart that we become more like his son. We're conformed to the image of his son, right? And some biblical examples of that is John the Baptist. He said, he must increase and I must decrease. What is that? That's saying, I want so much of you in my life. I want to line up how I think and how I feel and how I act so much that when people look at me, it's not me. It's way less John the Baptist and it's way more Jesus, right? And then we have the Apostle Paul says, I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. Again, what is he saying? He's saying, I have such a desire to be so close to you and to have my life line up the way I think and feel and act, to line up with your heart, that when people would look at me, Paul, they wouldn't see Paul, they would see Jesus. And that's what it means to desire and to hunger and thirst for righteousness, that we would desire that all of our lives, every part of our life would line up with who Jesus is, would line up with the righteousness of God, would line up with the rightness of God, right? That's what our desire would be. And so let's go back to the promise here, Matthew 5:6. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. How are we going to be satisfied? Because if we go back to that hedonic adaptation, we go back to the way our hearts work and our minds work, we recognize that as we are satisfied, our longing continues to grow. It's an eternal longing, right? So our satisfaction will last only as long as the object of our longing lasts, right? Like so to give you an example, my oldest son, he plays like video games all the time. And now that it's a sport, it's okay. And so anyway, he plays it all the time. And we recently got a game around Christmas. It's a Star Wars game, shocker. It's a Bible game. He's Moses. I used to play it on Nintendo. That is not a joke. Southern Baptist boy. All right. But anyway, so he plays the Star Wars game and he beat it insanely fast. Like so fast that I was like, am I doing something wrong as a parent? You know what I mean? Like, did he eat dinner last night? Like, I couldn't remember. How did he beat it so fast? And then like he explored the whole world. And so I'm playing it myself, like at the same time. And he'd come up to me like, hey dad, did you find it? And I was like, stop it. No spoilers. All right. But he like beats it and then he moves on. And he like completely moves on with the game. Why? Because like his longing is now exceeding the object of his longing, right? He's done it all. It's satisfied. It's done. It's over, right? But then, because people who create video games know how our brains work, they're like, hey, good news. We got a new update. If you pay us $5 more, we'll give you new lightsabers. And so Max was like, can I have $5? And I was like, why? And he was like, I want to buy a Bible study. And I was like, you want to buy lightsabers? And he was like, that's right. And I was like, I appreciate the hustle. And so anyway, so he buys the new lightsabers, right? And he's back in the game. Why? Because the object of his longing continues to expand, right? So as his desire expands, the object of his longing expands. And so think about it this way. Let's put it up here. The only lasting satisfaction that could be found for our infinite longing is an infinite God. If our longing that God has put in us is truly eternal, if it is ever expanding, then the only lasting satisfaction that could be found for our infinite longing is our infinite God. Understanding that you can find satisfaction in your family and in your career and in your ambitions and in your dreams and all these other things, but the reality is like your longing will exceed them. Your longing will exceed whatever your financial goals are. Your longing will exceed your career. Your longing will exceed your retirement. Let me just ask you right now, think about the goals that you hit 10 years ago. You satisfied? You've been sitting here for the past 10 years going, man, this is good. This has been a good decade, all right? Like, I started off strong. I already met all my goals. No, where are you? You want, right? You desire, right? So our longing will always exceed these other things in our lives. So if we have an infinite longing, if it's truly an infinite longing, then the only thing that's going to lead us to lasting satisfaction is an infinite God. And that's what we have in Jesus. Look at what Jesus says in John 6:35. He says, it's not up there. I'll read it to you. Here we go. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never thirst. What is Jesus saying? You can never desire me too much. You can never long for me too much. Like, your longing will not outgrow my infinite worth and my infinite value. Like, you will never get to the end of me. So go ahead and long for more of me, because there's more of me to long for. Go ahead and desire more of me, because I have more to reveal to you, right? So truly, the only lasting satisfaction for our infinite longing is an infinite God, right? And so how do we pursue him like that? What does it look like? Well, let's go back. What does it say? Hunger and thirst, right? Now, hunger and thirst meant something different to this first century audience, right? Like, there is a time, not too long ago, where literally people would wake up in the day and you would go, what are you doing today? And you'd be like, getting bread and water. You'd be like, what else are you doing? Surviving. Like, that was it, all right? Like, that was their whole life. We've got to get bread today, right? Like, that is your goal, right? And that's not necessarily how we live anymore, right? That's not necessarily what our day-to-day is, but that is absolutely theirs. And so what is the point of that? Hunger and thirst means it's a constant priority. It's a constant priority for them. So Jesus is saying, your pursuit of me, your longing of me should be infinite, and your pursuit of me should be infinite, and it should be a constant priority. And so is that true? As we look at our own lives, is it true that our constant priority in our life, our day-to-day priority in our life, is the pursuit of God? And if it is not, and I'm sure that's not true for all of us at all times. So if it's not true, why is that? And I think it's because we have misplaced longings. I think we place longings on other things. Like my constant priority, everyone has a constant priority, but if it's not set on God, it's set somewhere. So my constant priority is my career, or my constant priority is my kids, or my constant priority is my financial goals, or my constant priority is just being happy, whatever it is, right? It's the constant priority. Did Siri just talk to me? She sure did. What's up, Siri? All right, so anyway, I just had this like voice on my wrist and I thought it was Holy Spirit, but it was Siri. All right, so anyway. So we have these constant priorities, okay? And Saint Augustine wrote about it when he said this. Late have I loved you, beauty so old and so new. Late have I loved you, and see, you were within, and I was in the external world and sought you there. And in my unlovely state, I plunged into those lovely created things which you made. You were with me, and I was not with you. The lovely things kept me far from you. What is he saying? He's saying that, like, I was placing my longings on these lovely things that you created. God has gifted us with unbelievable gifts, right? I mean, look at where we live. Let me just start with that real quick, okay? Like, I every now and then I get on my weather app and I look at Memphis, like where I'm from, where my family is, And I'm like, 28? Well, God's forsaken that place. You know what I mean? So just like look at where we live, right? And just think about all that God has given us, all these beautiful gifts, our family and our friends, our church, our careers, like all these wonderful things that God has given us. But St. Augustine said that those lovely things kept me far from you. I was diving into those things. I was setting my longings on those things rather than setting those longings on you, right? So I think they're misplaced longings. So the reality is we need to reset our longings straight up. And so how do we do that? Well, I want to look at Psalm 63. So if you have a Bible, you can turn there because we're going to read this together real quick. Psalm 63. If you don't have a Bible, there should be some on the ends of the rows. You can ask someone to pass it down to you. But they're there as well. Psalm 63. And I'm going to read this for us. And then we're going to look in here real quick and see what we can learn about resetting our longings. He says this: "Oh God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh faints for you, as in a dry and weary land where there is no water." Do you hear that same language? That's longing, right? "So I've looked upon you in the sanctuary, beholding your power and glory, because your steadfast love is better than life. My lips will praise you. So I'll bless you as long as I live. In your name, I'll lift up my hands. My soul will be satisfied as with fat and rich food. And my mouth will praise you with joyful lips when I remember you upon my bed and meditate on you in the watches of the night. For you have been my help. And in the shadow of your wings, I will sing for joy. My soul clings to you. Your right hand upholds me. But those who seek to destroy my life shall go down into the depths of the earth. They shall be given over to the power of the sword. They shall be a portion for jackals. But the king shall rejoice in God. All who swear by him shall exult, for the mouths of liars will be stopped." I think the first thing that we can learn about resetting our longings from Psalm 63 is you need to remember where he wrote this. Like the psalmist, King David, he wrote this in the wilderness, not in his palace. And that's incredibly important for us. When he says there in verse 1, "as in a dry and weary land where there is no water," that's probably where he was. When my wife and I several years ago went to Israel, we went to En-Gedi. We went to literally the desert and the mountains where King David was running when he was running from Saul. And this is the belief that when he wrote this, maybe that's exactly what's happening. Or maybe he was running from his son at this point. But this is a place that he would have been running in the desert, in the wilderness. And it was a dry and weary land. You couldn't believe it. Every now and then you'd see little patches of green, and that's where water was. And it was just few and far between. And so he is in the wilderness, not in a palace. What does that mean? Here's why that matters. Is because we all live in palaces, all of us. And you go, "Actually, I don't know. I have 6 roommates in a 1-bedroom apartment," right? Like, I'm not necessarily in a palace. Here's what I mean. We live comfortable and controlled lives. Like, that's what living in a palace looks like. Is you live in comfort and you have ultimate control of what's happening in that palace. And maybe to reset our longings, we need to step out of our palaces. Here's what I mean. 1 Timothy 6:9 tells us that the desire for wealth is a temptation that can be a trap for us. And so maybe the reality is the palaces that we so enjoy, as St. Augustine talks about, the beauty that he so enjoyed, have become a trap for us. And they've become a trap for our longings. Jesus says in Matthew 13, he talks about there's a man who, the kingdom of heaven is like a man who found a pearl of great price and sold everything he had to obtain that pearl. I think oftentimes because we collect everything, we live in a, we just have a rich mindset. We have this palace mindset. I think sometimes we look at God and we go, I see the value. That's a wonderful pearl, right? I'm going to go ahead. Why can't I have that and all of this, right? Why can't I put that right on the shelf next to all the other things in my life, right? Like, why can't I have my career like this and you? Why can't I have my finances like this and you, right? Like, why can't I have both? But you know, in Acts chapter 2, you see the early church and they're selling everything they have and giving to those who had need. I think what you're seeing, it's more than about the money, as if God needed the money. It's more than that. What they're doing is they're letting go of things so they can have more of Jesus. What are they doing? They're resetting their longings. I said, we have longed for this money. We've longed for these resources. We've longed for this lifestyle. But like the pearl of great price, we have found something far better. So we're going to let go. We're going to step out of these palaces that we've built. And we're going to step into the wilderness and look for you, Jesus, right? Why is it? I mean, isn't it true that some of the most profound moments of faith in your life and in my life happen in the same moments of that we suffer profound loss? Isn't that true? Some of the most profound moments of satisfaction in the Lord have happened to me when I've suffered the most profound losses. Am I alone on that? Is anybody else out there, right? Like, isn't that true for you? Why is that? I think it's because Joni Erickson Tada said, sometimes you don't know that God is all you need until he's all you have. And so we're in those places of longing. We're in those places of need. Our longings reset. And we recognize all these other things that I've placed my longings on, all these other things that I've placed my primary desire on, my constant priorities on, they're gone. And I still want more. And the only one who can satisfy that, the only one who can satisfy that infinite longing is an infinite God. And so we do that. And so I don't want us to wait for tragedy for us to reset our longings. I don't want you to sit there and go, oh, so I just need to wait for something terrible to happen to me. No, absolutely not. I think we need to ask ourselves this question. How can you step out of your palace? How can you step out of your palace? Is it a matter of giving something up? Is it a matter of giving up your privacy, right? And letting other people in your life to challenge you, right? Is it a matter of control of your schedule? Is it a matter of financial goals or different plans that you have for your family? Like, how can you step out of that place of comfort and control so that you will reset your longings, pull it off of those things and place it onto God? Can I tell you one, a big one for mine is just letting go of control, letting go of control. Like that is something I've always felt like I've been in control, and then we had four kids and I was like, dear God, right? Like I have no control in my life, right? And so I grab onto the things I can control, and they're really important to me. It's really important for me to be able to control what's happening here, right? And I think that's one of the ways that I'm building my palace. Like that makes me comfortable, and I like that. I like being in control of my schedule. I like being in control of my day. I like being in control of all my interactions with people throughout the day. But one of the ways that I can reset my longing and set it back on God is in one way I step out of my palace to do that is I give up control. And I say in the morning, okay, God, this is your day. And I look at my schedule and I say, okay, God, this is your schedule. And I think about the interactions I have throughout the day. And I go, okay, God, this is your interaction that you want me to have. And so I want to speak your words, and I want to encourage them in the way that you want me to encourage them, right? And so how can you do that? How can you step out of your palace? Because look at what happens to him when he does. When he steps out of his palace, he's enabled to reset his longings, put them on God, and God became the priority for his day. Look back at verse 1. Oh God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. Earnestly. That means like I get up and I am after you. I am looking for you. Earnestly I seek you. It makes me think about our kids. So I don't know if this happens in your house. It started happening in our house just a few years ago. And it was real strange. After Thanksgiving, up until Christmas, these elves showed up and they sat on shelves. And they're in our house. And they like watch our kids, and they give us a great way to threaten them up until Christmas, right? We're like, the elves are watching. So anyway, like we have that. And every night they go back to the North Pole. Wink, and then they end up somewhere else in the house, unless mom and dad forget. And so what happens is my kids wake up in the morning, and like if I could be in front of their door, like with cinnamon rolls and a big hug waiting for them, and they would just like run through my chest to get into the rest of the house. Why? Because they gotta find those elves. Like that is their thing. Like they're tripping over each other, and they're like, they earnestly are seeking these things every single day leading up to Christmas. And I think about that picture of David saying, oh God, you are my God, earnestly I seek you. You are my daily priority. Like this is what I want today. More than anything else, and in everything I have to do today, I want you today. And so the thing we need to ask ourselves is, what stops me from making God my priority of the day? What stops me? Can I tell you what stops me? It's my palace. It's usually my palace. Like it's what I see as most important. It's my control. You know what I'm saying? Like I got to do this today. This is most important today. This will make me the most happy today. Like whatever it is, it's that control, right? And I was reading in psychology today, and they were talking about, you know, these first few minutes of the day when you first wake up, your mind and brain are super receptive to being influenced, super receptive to being influenced. And they call that, your mind is in what they call the responsive mode, which again, it's like a sponge. And so they talk about all of the things that you do in those first moments of the day really can affect the rest of your day. You ever talk to somebody and they're like, oh, I woke up this morning to my kid came in and threw up on my bed, right? Like that's how, and so I'm having a bad day. What psychology would say is, yes, you are. All right? Like you absolutely are. What you're doing in those early moments of the day is setting your brain up and setting the trajectory for your emotions throughout the day. And so that's one of the things that we can do in those moments in the start of the day is we surrender our palace in the start of the day. And we say, okay, God, I'm not in control. You're in control. The first thing we can do is we can make him our priority by setting our minds on him. Because again, whatever we're doing first thing in the morning, we are setting our minds somewhere, which means I had to make some changes the way I start my day. I don't know what the start of your day is like. I start off like I am looking forward to when the, you know, computers take over and we serve the Terminators. And so like I have like a Google Home right next to my bed, and every morning I wake up and I say, "Good morning, Google." And you're like, "That's weird that you say that." Well, it does something. So when I say that, it turns all my lights on, and then it tells me the weather, and it tells me my calendar for the day, and then it tells me like the news, right? And that was how I was starting my day. And I didn't even realize what I was doing. I was giving some of the most important, influential moments of my day, I was giving it over to the news, right? So like throughout the day, like that would affect me, right? Like that's what was on my mind. That's what was setting my attention. And I'll tell you, I don't know if you listen to the news lately. It doesn't typically start off going, you should rejoice in the day that the Lord has made. You know what I mean? It starts off going, well, Russia's at it again. Like that's how the news is, right? And so again, what stops us from making God our priority of the day? And so we need to give him those first moments, because the other thing that happens is look what, after he does that, God becomes his final thoughts at night. Look at verse 6. When I remember you upon my bed and meditate on you in the watches of the night. This is all about relationship. For my wife and I, these are some of the most precious moments that we have, because our kids are unconscious. And so we lay there and we can talk, and we talk about the day, and we talk about, you know, we talk about the next day, and we just talk about things. And it's one of the most precious times that we have. And I'll tell you, if one of us like goes to bed without the other one, like something's wrong. Is that just my household? Is that anybody else's? Like that's one of the most passive aggressive ways we can strike out at one another. It's just slowly slide in the bedroom and go to sleep. Because the other person will come in and go, "You didn't even say goodnight," right? Like, so that's some of the passive aggressiveness in our own home, right? But you know what? Like actually psychology backs this up. I was reading this article that said, if your partner's in bed, you should be too. And what it was talking about, and so for any of you in here who like to stay up too late, I'm about to ruin your day. So what they're talking about, as I said, research has found that like when couples have been together 10 to 12 years, my wife about next month, they're celebrating 14. They said around that 10 to 12 mark, I was 13 when I got married. It was fine. My parents signed it. But anyway, around that 10 to 12 mark, they say that there's a slow drift that begins to happen in couples that have been together that long. And they slowly begin to drift away. And one of the primary ways that they do that is they stop going to bed at the same time. And their sleep cycles get out of sync. And here's what this clinical psychologist and sleep medicine specialist, which I didn't know was a real thing until I read this, Wendy Troxell, she said this: for many couples, that time in bed before going to sleep is sometimes the most precious time and most important time. Research shows this time helps people feel nurtured, relaxed. It can also inspire feelings of love, happiness, comfort, satisfaction, bonding, and feeling appreciated. So think about that. Like that time, as your day is over, you can finally, I don't know about you, but when I lay down in bed, like, and it's, I'm not getting back up, like, this is it, I'm going to sleep. For me, there's a long sigh I let out when I lay down in bed. Just a long, like, all right. You know what I mean? The things that I've done are done, and the things I've left undone will stay undone until tomorrow. All right? Like, that's it. I am going to bed. And when we do that, we put ourselves in a place of really, like, we're open for connection in that moment. Because all the other stuff, all the other distractions are gone. Like, here we are. And so when we think about our relationship with God, it's an incredibly important time for our relationship with God. And I don't know if we think about that very often. Like our moment right before we go to sleep, our moment at the end of the day, we should be turning our attention back to him. And so the question we need to ask ourselves is, what stops me from letting him be in my thoughts at the end of the day? What stops me from letting him be in my thoughts at the end of the day? I'm going to go back to the it's my palace. It's my comfort. And so you know what stops me from letting him be my thought at the end of the day? Netflix is what stops me, right? It's true. Like we'll get in bed and we have a TV in our bed, but if that doesn't work, I can put up an iPad, then I can put up a phone, right? Like I have all kinds of screens that I can put in front of my face before I go to sleep, right? And so I have Netflix, I have my phone, or maybe I can't stop working and I'm in bed and I'm returning emails or whatever it is, right? But this is an incredibly important part of our relationship with God, is to end the day with him as the psalmist did. If we're gonna reset our longings, we need to end our day with him. And so let me challenge you to do something tonight. Tonight, when you lay down, when you put your head on the pillow, I want you to fill your thoughts with him. I want you to spend time in prayer with him. And you're like, well, I don't know. I'm going to fall asleep. Like, if I do that, fine. Like, fall asleep in front of the Father. Is that a problem, right? Like, you think he's offended by that? Like, he never sleeps. So he watches you sleep. It's fine. You know what I mean? Like, he's not like, oh, she fell asleep, right? Like, no, I mean, the scriptures tell us that, like, that God gives his beloved rest, right? So go to sleep. But, like, go to sleep with him on your mind, right? Like, that's a beautiful thing. What a wonderful time to connect with him. I challenge you to do that. You know, I'd like to close for us thinking about, as we like reset our longings on God, this is ultimately a work of God. You know, the psalmist in Psalm 51, he wrote this, "Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me." Like, God, would you reset the longings of my heart? There's a lot that we can do, and we should absolutely hunger and thirst for righteousness. We should hunger and thirst for more of God, and having our lives, our wants and our needs and our feelings and all those things line up with the rightness of God. But ultimately, it's a work of God that he's going to do in our lives. And so for us to close today, I think the best way we could close today is to ask him to do that work for us. And so I'd like for us to spend some time in prayer as we reset our longings and ask God to reset our longings so that we long after the things things of him, the things that have infinite value and infinite satisfaction. And then I want to pray Psalm 63 over us as well. So would you join me in prayer? With our heads bowed and our eyes closed, just I want you to ask yourself, I just want you to think about yourself right now and just think, do I need to reset my longings? Like, do I have a restless spirit right now within me? Do I have a restless soul within me right now? Because my longings are set on things that ultimately cannot truly satisfy. I recognize that I have an infinite longing within me, and I keep setting it on the finite. I keep setting it on my family and on my kids, and I keep setting it on my relationships. I keep setting it on my career, and I keep setting it on whatever it is. And then we recognize, I just want more, and I want more, I want more. And when we recognize our longing is infinite. So do we need to reset those? Do we need to move those onto the infinite God? And so God, would you help us do that? We cannot do that ourselves. We can join you in what you're doing. We can make these conscious decisions to let go of the comfort and control that comes with our palace so that we can set our affections on you. We can do that. We can make a conscious decision to, in the morning, give you those incredibly important, influential moments just as we wake up. And we can make a decision that at the end of the day today, when we lay our head on the pillow, we're going to fill our thoughts with you. We can do those things. But ultimately, God, those are empty. And ultimately, God, those will not help us without your spirit at work in our lives. It's not going to help us to lay our head on the pillow at night if you don't come and meet with us. It's not going to help us to give you those early morning moments if you're not going to meet with us there and give us wisdom there and give us strength there and give us joy there. It's not going to mean anything for us to let go of control and to step out of our comfort and our control if you're not going to be there to meet us and to give us something better. And so, God, we acknowledge our absolute need for you. And so, God, forgive us where we have placed our longings on things that will never really satisfy. As we have traded the eternal living water for broken cisterns we've made on our own that won't satisfy. God, forgive us for that. And help us to place our longings back on you. Help us to make our primary desire of our life to be more of you and less of us. So God, would you help us? So Father, we pray your word over us now. Oh God, you are our God, and earnestly we seek you. Our souls thirst for you. Our flesh faints for you, as in a dry and weary land where there is no water. So we have looked upon you in the sanctuary, beholding your power and glory, because your steadfast love is better than life. Our lips will praise you. So we will bless you as long as we live. In your name, we will lift up our hands. Our souls will be satisfied as with fat and rich food, and our mouths will praise you with joyful lips when we remember you upon our beds and meditate on you in the watches of the night. For you have been our help, and in the shadow of your wings, we will sing for joy. Our souls cling to you. Your right hand upholds us. Amen.